Okay, well, let's turn to Revelation chapter 18. Struggling a bit this evening. My ear's a bit blocked, so it's really difficult when you're preaching because you can't gauge whether you're talking too quiet or too loud. You know what I mean? It's a bit of a struggle, so just bear with me this evening. So we're going to read chapter 18. We're going to read the whole chapter down to verse 24. So just to remind you what I was saying the other week, the kind of plan going forward for these Bible studies is that last week and this week we're looking at the subject of the fall of Babylon, and then next week is going to be Armageddon. I don't mean Armageddon is going to be next week. I mean next week the subject of the Bible study is, well, it might, well, no. and then the week after that we're going to be looking at the subject of the second coming of Christ from chapter 19. And then on the 30th, we're going to have a questions evening, okay, before we go into the next section of Revelation. So the idea is that if there's anything we've looked at so far in the book of Revelation that we haven't covered properly, or you've got some questions relating to that, well, the 30th is going to be a questions evening. You can send me them by email first, or you can ask me on the night. But if there aren't any questions, we'll just move swiftly on to the millennium, okay? So if there's no questions, I'll take that to mean I've explained everything perfectly well. Okay, but if there's anything else, if you want us to look at something particular, then I'm talking about in connection with the book of Revelation, that will be for the 30th. And then if there's loads of questions, and we can't cover them all in one night, we'll have two Thursday evenings of questions, all right, and then we'll carry on from there. Okay, so chapter 18. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, unless you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Render to her just as she rendered to you, and repay her double according to her works, in the cup which she has mixed double for her. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, and I'm no widow, and I will not see sorrow. Therefore her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of objects of ivory, every kind of objects of most precious wood, bronze, iron and marble, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle, sheep, horses and chariots and bodies and souls of men. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things, who became rich by her, will stand at a distance for fear of her torments, weeping and wailing, and saying, Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine purple and scarlet, fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in one hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, What is like this great city? They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she is made desolate. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her." Then a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, "Thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found any more. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists and trumpeteers shall not be heard in you any more. No craftsman or craft shall be found in you any more. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you any more. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you any more. And the voice of bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you any more. For your merchants were the great men of the earth. For by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints, and of all who were slain on the earth." Okay, so the subject here is the fall of Babylon the Great. Now, as we saw last time, we're not talking here about the fall of ancient Babylon, which reached its zenith of greatness, of course, in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, in the days of the prophet Daniel. That already fell to the Medes and Persians back in 539 BC. So we're not talking about ancient Babylon, neither are we talking about the original kingdom of Babylon, as it was known then, Babel. God called it Babel because he confused the languages. I'm talking there about Babel, Babylon, that was founded by that arch-apostate of old, the man Nimrod. So we're not talking about the original Babylon, although that is where Babylon of Revelation 17 and 18 actually has its origins. We're talking here about a city, a kingdom, built and based on a godless, antichrist, political and religious worldview. A kingdom that is in rebellion against God and exists as a sort of alternative to God's ways, to God's kingdom. As I say, its origins can be traced right back to Babel in the time of Nimrod, but its influence now spans the globe. Babylon is everywhere. It takes on many different forms, and actually it's very good at generational and cross-cultural adaptation. That means it can fit in with anything, or make anything fit in with it. It adapts very easily. And yet, Babylon has, and I think I explained this last week, has two sides to it, always had and still has today. There is what I'm calling a sort of social, economic and political side that provides people with a sort of alternative worldview, a different set of values and an alternative way of life to that which the Creator God expects his creatures, is the people he created in his own image, to live by. And actually, in the original Babylon, Nimrod headed up that political, social side, if you like. But there's also a religious and spiritual side to it that provides men and women with a different God or a different set of gods. And actually, in the original Babylon, back in the time of Nimrod, those gods were named after men. Most of them, men who lived, who were regarded as God-like. And so it provides people with a different God or a different set of gods, a different spirituality, and a different way to serve and to worship God, a different belief system, in other words. So last week we were thinking about the fall of Babylon, the counterfeit religious system, by looking at chapter 17, and this evening I want us to focus on the fall of Babylon, the social, economic, political kingdom. And so we're looking at chapter 18. Now, you'll notice, first of all, in verses 17 to 19 there's this reference to a great city. And this, together with what we're told in verses 9 to 16, appear to suggest that this great city is on the coast of some great sea or great ocean. You'll notice the reference to those who sail in ships and they're watching it burn from a distance. So some people believe this is a city, and it's set on the coast somewhere of some sea or some ocean. And it's a city that is, it appears, renowned for international trade and commerce. That's what verses 11 to 19 are all about. And then in verses 22 to 23, there's reference there to art and music and culture. So this is a city that is a centre for international trade and commerce. It is renowned for its art and its culture and its music. And it is obviously a very wealthy city in which can be found all the luxuries and all the stuff of this world in great abundance. And so all of that has led many to speculate as to whether this city is an actual city, or whether it's kind of symbolical of something, whether it's an actual city, and if so, which one? Which city is it? Which city is it that is seen burning in verses 18 and 19? Now, some people think it is Rome. And the reason for that suggestion is that, obviously, in verse 9 of chapter 17, there is a reference to Rome there. It doesn't name Rome, but it talks about the city set on seven hills, which is Rome, as we saw when we were looking at that passage in detail a few weeks ago. So some people think it's Rome. And obviously, in New Testament times, and actually for 300 or 400 years after New Testament times that are recorded in the Bible, Rome was really, in many ways, in a sense, the capital city of the world. I mean, there used to be a saying, didn't there, you know, all roads lead to Rome, and there's a reason for that. Rome was very much seen as the capital city of the known world at that particular time. And I think, as I pointed out last week, Babylon became a sort of, or I should say Rome became a pseudonym for Babylon. And I explained why last week. Rome became a pseudonym. Babylon became a pseudonym for Rome. And also, since then, right down the centuries really, Rome has been the capital and headquarters of the present mystery Babylon counterfeit religious system. Has its headquarters in Rome, doesn't it? You know what I'm talking about. And obviously that church, the Roman church, is rich beyond your wildest imagination. In all the ways referred to in verses 12 to 13 of this passage, that church is rich. I remember years ago sitting with Jim Sim in his living room, and he showed me this documentary he'd recorded, and it was all about the treasures of the Vatican. And they took you down into the vaults underneath the Vatican, and there are art treasures, room after room after room filled with art treasures of the value is just inestimable. And you've got Michelangelo's, everything's in there. I mean, they are rich beyond imagination. So some people think this great city referred to in chapter 18 that is now seen burning is Rome. There's reasons for thinking that. Others, however, think the Babylon of Revelation 18, the city it's referred to there in verse 19, is possibly some other great city of international trade and commerce, politics, culture and influence. Not necessarily Rome, but some other existing city. And the reference to this city here as Babylon is not because that's the actual name of this city, but because Babylon sums up its character and its spirit, you see. This is what some people think. And so then, of course, people speculate, as if that is true, well, which city is it? Which city in the world today, for example, is a city set on the sea, that is a city of international trade, that is wealthy, immensely wealthy and rich, a place where there is culture and music and all these other things. And some people would suggest New York City is that city. that it's New York City. And again, I think there are reasons I can understand why people would suggest New York City. Because, for a start off, it is the city, certainly a city, but possibly you could say the city of international trade and commerce is New York City. And of course, the United Nations has its headquarters in New York City in Lower Manhattan, is the United Nations building. So, in a sense, you could say that New York City is currently the seat of international government, of global government, if you see the UN in that kind of a light. Certainly the UN is possibly a forerunner of a global government system, and it has its headquarters there in New York City. And New York City is certainly a godless and a corrupt place. I'm not saying by that there's nothing good in New York. I'm just saying that the place is a godless city in terms of its character. And so for these and other reasons, some suggest that Babylon is in fact New York City. And I'm sure that if you watch the film footage from those terrible events of 9/11 and then read verses 17 and 18 from this chapter, well, you can understand why some people might make a connection. Halfway down verse 17, every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like this great city? You remember that day when you saw the footage of the Twin Towers burning and all the devastation. And so some people would put that together with this and make a connection between the two. Yet, I think we have to realise this, that terrible though the events of 9/11 were, that was not this. See, 9/11 did not bring about the final destruction of New York City, did it? It was terrible. But it didn't bring to an end New York City, nor did it bring to an end America or world trade. Though I'm sure whoever was responsible for 9/11 wanted that to happen. It didn't happen. Okay, so some people think it's New York City. Others think that actually Babylon here really is Babylon. Because Babylon, they think, is, and I'm talking about the ancient city of Babylon, is going to be rebuilt. Now, as a matter of fact, archaeologists are already reconstructing, or trying to reconstruct ancient Babylon from the ruins that they've found there. But I mean something bigger than that. I mean a new Babylon. A new city of Babylon that will become, some believe, the administrative headquarters of the end times Antichrist and a sort of capital city of world trade and commerce. So that what is currently called the United Nations, with its headquarters in New York City, will come under the control of Antichrist, who will move its headquarters from New York City to this newly built city of Babylon, which, as we all know, is in present-day Iraq. Okay? And some say that happens because New York City will be destroyed. Others say because America's influence in the world declines. And, for example, oil, which currently is traded in US dollars, starts to be bought and sold in another currency or other currencies. Of course, by the time you get to the time of Antichrist, there won't be currencies as such, because it'll be a cashless society based on this Mark of the Beast system, you see. But right now, we have currency, we have currencies, and oil is traded in US dollars. But some people think that for whatever reason, at some point in the future, that will cease to be the case, and oil will be traded in other currencies. And then you see, with the rise of China and India as global economies in the world, some would say it makes sense to have somewhere midway between East and West as a sort of centre of trade and commerce, you see. Some even think that this is what the Gulf Wars were really all about. Some people believe that. I'm only telling you what some people believe. In fact, some students of biblical prophecy believe that at some point, soon maybe, the USA as a global economic and political superpower will be gone. And there are a number of reasons why students of biblical prophecy believe that. One is because there's no obvious reference to America in the Bible. I might want to suggest a few passages that could be America, but not in the same way that Russia is obviously referred to in the Gog and Magog War and things, you know, things like that. Russia is obviously named using the ancient names, but America doesn't seem to be. And that's one reason. But some people, actually not just biblical students, but students of secular students of politics and of current affairs, feel that America as a superpower at some stage will actually be gone, either through a series of devastating disasters. I mean, have you seen the film from California at the moment? That's just unbelievable. But you see, you've got all this threat along the west coast of tectonic plate shift. You know, you've got places like Yellowstone National Park, which is a super volcano. You've got all that kind of thing. You've got Hollywood making the films before any of it's happened. And so, for reasons of natural disaster, some people think that will be what causes America to cease to exist as the sort of global economic superpower that it is today. Others think it'll be through nuclear attack, or through an attack using EMPs or something like that that puts out all the computers and all the lights, or simply because the economic balloon finally bursts. I mean, I remember a few years ago, back in about 2008, 2009, the threat was, well, the way they talked, I mean, how much of this is true, who knows? You only go off what you hear on the news. But they were saying that America was on the precipice as far as its economy was concerned. It was spiralling out of control, and they were about to go over the edge. And they were making decisions in Congress and that actually took them step back from the precipice, as it were. And whether all that's true or whether they talk these things up, I don't really know. But some people think the economic balloon, because everything's based on credit nowadays. Well, when the creditors come for the money, maybe the balloon will burst. Maybe it'll be that. But whatever it is, the USA ceases to be a world player as it is right now. As I say, if Babylon is to be rebuilt so that it becomes the capital city and administrative centre of the Beast Empire, it might explain what the two Gulf Wars were really all about. Because does anybody really know why we went to war? You know, I don't hear any reasonable explanation for that. So maybe that's so. That's what some people think anyway. Still, be that as it may, I would suggest to you that Babylon here in chapter 18 is more than just a city anyway. Babylon is a kingdom. Babylon here is a kingdom built on a godless antichrist philosophy and worldview. It is the kingdom of man under sin, in rebellion against God. As the Apostle Paul put it in Ephesians chapter 2, walking according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who works in the sons of disobedience, who conduct themselves in the lusts of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. It's the kingdom of this world, the kingdom of man in rebellion against God. And it's already here, of course. What we're reading here in chapter 18 of Revelation is what happens to Babylon in the future, but Babylon is here today. It's been with us from the start, going right back to the time of Nimrod. As Paul puts it in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7, the mystery of iniquity is already at work. It's the spirit of Babylon. It's already at work. And you see, if you look at history, there are times when, let's call it the river of Babylon, that's been flowing from the time of Nimrod. There are times when it overflows. It flows up, as it were. And you can see it manifesting itself in all sorts of terrible ways and with horrible consequences, only to be pushed back for a time. I mean, if you go back in the last century, time of the First World War, time of the Second World War, these were terrible times in the for this world, weren't they? And then after the Second World War, it's pushed back. The evil, as it were, is pushed back for a time. Why? Because, as it says in 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 7, he who now restrains was restraining, was holding it back. He lifted his hand of restraint for a while, and you get a World War II. You get a Hitler on the world stage. You get a World War II. You get the mass murder of 6 million Jews. You get all those kinds of things. And then the restrainer holds it back again. But eventually, he who now restrains will be taken out of the way. And then it says the lawless one will be revealed. And then the kingdom of man, the kingdom of man in sin, the kingdom of Babylon, the kingdom of this world, will be manifest in its fully developed form. This is the kingdom of the beast, and it's global in proportions. And it has its headquarters somewhere in this city that characterizes everything that Babylon is in terms of its nature, its character, its philosophy, its worldview, all of which is rebellion against God. Point is, see, Babylon isn't just a city. It isn't just a land. It's a way of life, if you like. It involves politics, ideology, religious belief. It involves the economy of this world. It involves commerce. It involves trade. It involves art and music and culture. It involves philosophy and how people view life in this world, what they think the place is in the world, the purpose of life. It's about how man sees himself and his place in the universe. If you look at, notice Revelation chapter 18, just read a few verses. Verse 7. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, and I'm no widow, and will not see sorrow. Verse 9. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. And then verse 11. To 19, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, pearl, silk, scarlet, every kind of citron wood, all these other things. And then verses 22 and 23 talk about music and craftsmanship and art. You see, these are all the things that are important to the people of Babylon. You get it? Luxury. Self-esteem, I sit as a queen. The things that people buy, the money they have, the art, the music, the culture. These are all the things that the people of Babylon love. If you go forward now to, let's go back a few chapters to chapter 9 of Revelation and verse 21. It says, they did not repent of their murders, or their sorceries, or their sexual immorality, or their thefts. You see, and those things characterize life in Babylon. The interesting thing is that the people there don't want to repent of it. Don't want to stop doing it. So you go forward then to chapter 21 and verse 8. And we see here that those are the very things that keep them out of God's kingdom and keep them out of the new heavens and the new earth. It says, the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Chapter 22, verse 15. Outside are the dogs, the sorcerers, sexually immoral, and murderers, and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. They are the very things that keep them out of God's kingdom and out of the blessedness of his heaven. But it should be obvious to us, friends, that Babylon is already here. Just by looking at the sort of things that the people of Babylon love. We live in Babylon today. Don't be deceived. Don't be confused by the fact that some countries and regions of the world on the surface appear to be free, whilst other countries and regions of the world, people who live there live under oppressive regimes and ideologies and brutal dictators. But listen, free or otherwise, as far as the eye sees these things, it's all Babylon. I mean, the thing about us here in the West is people generally talk about democracy like it's the perfect system that guarantees our freedoms and our rights and our right to choose who we will have ruling over us in government. Democracy. But have you ever asked yourself the question, who do we actually have to vote for? Only the people who are chosen for us to vote for. You understand what I'm saying? And who chooses them? And then once they become elected into government, who controls those who've been voted into power? Who actually sets the agenda? I mean, our country, is it Theresa May? Does she set the agenda for everything? See, I mean, for example, who says the majority of people in this country are happy with the promotion of things like LGBTQ rights? Who says that the vast majority of the public are happy with that agenda that's promoted and the sort of stuff they are teaching our children in schools from the earliest stage? Who says we're all happy with that? But they do it anyway. They do it anyway. And when they actually ask the public their opinion about something and give you a ballot paper where you can state your opinion and make a choice about it, when the public vote for a certain thing, if the powers that be don't like the decision the public made, they say, no, you can't have it. And when asked why, they say, because the general public don't really understand. You are all too thick to understand the issues. You should leave it to the politicians. You know what I'm talking about? The majority of the public voted for Brexit. Have we got Brexit? No. And as day passes today and week to week, it looks less likely we're going to get it anyway, in any real form. But the public said that's what we want. And it's the same in America. I mean, their policy has nothing to do with me. I'm not an American. And I can only go off what I see. But you know, you get a president like Mr. Obama, who is a good talker, a good communicator, who looks right and sounds right and dresses right and makes all the right kind of moves, and he does and he says what the liberal left want to hear, and the world loves him. They give him the Nobel Peace Prize before he's even done anything. And then somebody else follows him who maybe doesn't look and sound quite like one has come to expect a president to sound. But actually, he says and he does things that the liberal left don't like, and so they come for him. They're all out to get him. Because he does what the liberal left don't want him to do. You've got to ask yourself, who's really in control? This is Babylon, folks. And just like Babylon of old, somebody is sitting in the seat of power, even now. But whereas in ancient Babylon, you could see who that person was, in the time of Daniel, it was King Nebuchadnezzar. And you didn't mess about with a bloke like that. You could see who was in power. But I put it to you that nowadays, you don't necessarily know who it is that's pulling all the strings. You don't exactly know who it is who's pulling all the strings and controlling people through philosophy and through ideology or religion or through pervasive influence of the culture, TV, music, money, economy, greed, self-interest, politics, wars. In actual fact, it depends how big a conspiracy theorist you actually are. But there are some people who even believe that some of the wars that are fought in this world are decided beforehand by the powers that be. Shady individuals and money men who operate behind the scenes above government and actually pull all the strings. I mean, ask yourself this, talking about war. Think about a war. Who benefits from a war? Who benefits most from a war? I'll tell you, shall I? The arms dealers. The arms manufacturers who sell their weapons and their missiles to both sides. So whoever wins, they profit. Or here's another. Who benefits in Babylon today? Who benefits from sickness and disease and epidemics and viruses? Some of which, I put it to you, you're going to think I'm an arch conspiracy theorist here, aren't you? Some of these viruses and epidemics and diseases are things we never heard of up until relatively recently. So you ask yourself, well, where did they come from? But who benefits from them? The pharmaceutical companies that make the antidotes. They're the ones who benefit from it. This is Babylon, folks, and it's corrupt to the core. It's all about man. And there are essentially, according to the Bible, three things that keep it going. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's what the Bible says, 1 John chapter 2. And it also says it's not of the Father, but it's of the world. What is that? The lust of the flesh. That's all the things, as a human being, I want. The things that I think are going to make me feel good. The things that I want in this world. Things I think I need. Whatever that is. The lust of the eyes, that's all that I see. That I want. That I lust after. Pride of life, well, it's all about me. You know, we live in a very self-centered society, don't we? It's all about me. Self-assertion, self-aggrandizement, all the rest of it. Self, pride of life. Not of the Father, but it's of the world. Okay, but the good news is that this Babylon world is passing away and the lust of it. Let me just turn you to 1 John and chapter 2. I just quoted from. Verse 15, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So the good news is, this Babylon world is passing away, and the lust of it. Now I say, that is good news. I say the good news is, it's passing away. But that, of course, all depends on your point of view, whether it's good news or not. I mean, if you come back to Revelation chapter 18 and look at verses 9 to 10, it says there that the kings of the earth, that is to say the leaders, the politicians, they won't think it's good news that it's passing away. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come." They'll not be pleased about it. And then, of course, there are the merchants of the earth and the money men who make money from it. Read from verse 11 down to verse 19. The merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls, fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of most precious wood, bronze, iron and marble, and cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, and bodies and souls of men. The fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you, and all the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who became rich by her will stand at a distance for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, "Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travelled by ship, sailors, as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, 'What is like this great city?' They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, and saying, 'Alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she is made desolate.'" They'll not be pleased about it. Why? Because nobody buys their merchandise anymore. They won't be pleased about it because actually it was through Babylon that they made the money. No, and neither do those who provide or who enjoy the art and the music and the culture, the entertainment of Babylon. Look at verse 22. "The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists and trumpeters shall not be heard in you any more, nor craftsmen or any craft shall be found in you any more, and the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you any more. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you any more, and the voice of the bride and the bridegroom shall not be heard in you any more." So all of that is gone, and those who provide the music and the entertainment and the art and those who enjoy it, they'll not think it's good news that it's gone. You see, if those are the things that people live for, those things will be gone. If that's all people live for, money and music and art and things, it's all going to burn up. All going to burn up. Along with, verse 23, the drugs, the philosophy, the sorcery by which the nations were deceived, it says. And I take that to mean the trickery and deception by which the citizens of Babylon are deceived. And it's done in a number of ways, friends. For some, all it takes is to get them hooked on drugs or something at an early age, and it warps the minds. Messes them up in the heads. So they're like held like captives for the rest of their life, or until somehow they can get deliverance from that addiction. For others, the deception comes by subtle manipulation of their minds as to what they are and who they are and what life is all about and how to live it. And I think today, like no other day, you've got a generation growing up, they don't even know if they're boys or girls. It's an absolute tragedy. They don't know what they are. I read an article the other day. I should have brought it, and it was a news email from John McKay in Australia, and I don't know if it was the state of Australia, where the region where he lives, or some other region, and somebody had done a survey, and this is a society that is teaching children from an early age that they, if they're not comfortable being a boy, they can become a girl, they can have gender reassignment, as they call it, and all the rest of it, and that's promoted. That is the way of things there. And they did a survey amongst young people, and they found that one of the key problems for young people is that they just didn't know. It was an identity problem. They didn't know who they were, or what life is about. And you know what the double tragedy was? That this head teacher of a school invited John McKay and his team to come into the school and do some teaching on the subjects. Of course, they're creationist teaching, who teach that God made man and woman to be man and woman. And this head teacher of the school invited them to come and teach on that, but it was being resisted by the person who was the chaplain of the school. He was opposing it. What's that all about? The chaplain of the school opposed it because they took a biblical stance. So through subtle manipulation over decades now, people, we've arrived at this position where we've got boys walking through town holding hands and girls holding hands and all the rest of it, and people, it's unbelievable. Deception about what life is all about, what the purpose of life is all about. I remember, back in the day when I was a teenager, halfway through the 70s, punk rock came along, and there was a band late 70s called Ian Dury and the Blockheads. I don't know if anybody remembers them, but Ian Dury, he's died now actually, but he sang this song back in the day, and the lyrics were, "Sex and drugs and rock and roll are all my brain and body needs." And that was the song. And I don't know whether Ian Dury actually believed that. I don't know whether that was his, he was talking from the heart. I don't really know. But I do know this, that people would, he repeated those words over and over and over again in the song. Sex and drugs and rock and roll are all my brain and body needs. It repeats over and over again. And the nature of things with music fans, because I did it, is you sit there or you lie there with your headphones on or with the music blasting, and you listen to it over and over and over and over again. I used to go to sleep at night with my headphones on listening to my favourite bands. It's indelibly stamped on my brain. Even now, I can be driving in the car and a song comes on the radio from back then, and I know every lyric. I know every note of the guitar solo, because that's how it works. So my point is, Ian Dury is singing "Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is All My Brain and Body Needs" over and over and over again, and his listeners are listening to it over and over and over again. What's the message to get in? What's life all about? Sex and drugs and rock and roll are all your brain and body needs. And people live by that. For others, well, they come to think it's all about money and making money, getting rich, possessions. And so that's what they do, that's what they live for. Then they die. It can be a whole raft of things that people spend their lives doing or trying to do. See, those who control Babylon don't really care what people do, as long as they don't do God. As long as they don't believe on Him. As long as they don't embrace Christ as Lord and do the will of God, God's way. That's unacceptable in Babylon. And so Babylon has always persecuted the saints. Sometimes, and in some places, it has been able to do that without restraint, openly and officially, and still does to this present day. That's what I really don't get about our country and our government. You see, some politician makes a comment about women who wear burqas, and he's castigated for it and told to apologise. I don't know whether he has done yet or not, but no, he's not. Okay, so somebody makes a comment like that, you can't say that, because that's what ladies of a certain religion were. That's part of their religious identity. You can't say that. All right, tolerance, that's what it's all about. But me, see, I believe in like-for-like tolerance. So what I mean by that is, if they can walk down our streets with a burqa on, I think I should be able to walk down the streets of Saudi Arabia wearing a cross around my neck and carrying a Bible. But I can't. I think that if they can come here and build mosques, I should be able to go to Saudi Arabia or somewhere and build a church. But I can't. That's not like-for-like tolerance. That's imbalance. That's wrong. That's my view. They persecute people without restraints, officially. So if you were in, North Korea or Saudi Arabia or somebody, if I decide I'm going to do a bit of street preaching, in Mecca, at the time of the pilgrimage, I'm going to go there and do a bit of street preaching. Can I hope to last the day? I don't think so. Okay? Because persecution of Christians is official in that place. And you could be killed. In prison, certainly. But at other times, the tide turns. In some countries, the tide turns against that sort of thing. And it can't quite persecute in the same way. Like here, for example. Go back 400 or 500 years, we could be burned at the stake for preaching what we're preaching. But I ain't so anymore. I can go into church, I can preach the gospel. Okay, tide has turned for the time being. Yeah. Okay, but when that happens, when the tide turns, Babylon always finds another way to harass Christians and to spoil the church. And nowadays, here in the West, the rivers of Babylon are flowing through the church. That is a problem. And I would actually argue it's a bigger problem than burning the Christians at the stake, in a sense. You see, because when you've got a time of severe persecution, the only people who are going to stand are the serious Christians, who will say, like Luther of old, "Here I stand, I can do no other." Separates the men from the boys. But the trouble is, when you don't have severe persecution, and the church becomes wishy-washy, the rivers of Babylon flow through the church, and the church just becomes like the world. And the rivers of Babylon are flowing through the church today, and corrupting the church from within, but not for long. In the words of that old gospel hymn, "Just a few more weary days and then I'll fly away. To a land where joy shall never end, I'll fly away." In the meantime, what we've got to do, surely, is take seriously those words of the Apostle John in his epistle that I read earlier, chapter 2. Do not love the world. In other words, do not love Babylon. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So, soon Babylon will fall. In the meantime, we are here. So how can we keep ourselves from being sucked into and brainwashed by the philosophies of Babylon? How can we keep ourselves as Christian from that? I put it to you, primarily, it's by brainwashing ourselves with the Word of God. It's what we've got to do. We've got to keep in the Word of God. I've often said, some people say, well, that word brainwash is a bad word, that. And brainwash yourself? Isn't that a bad thing to do? Brainwash your children? Dear me, you shouldn't do that. And I say, well, why not? Because if I don't brainwash my children, someone or something else will. And if I don't brainwash myself with the Word of God, something else will come in. There's no neutral ground. You can't walk down the streets unless you're blind and deaf. You can't walk down the streets nowadays without picking some message up. The only antidote is the Word of God and fellowship and prayer and breaking of bread together and doing those things that Christians have always done. That's the antidote to Babylon. So that's why, in the New Testament, the apostles talk about the Christian believers as citizens of heaven on the way home. We're a colony of heaven on our way home. We're not supposed to be putting roots down here like we're going to be here forever. We're on our way home. We've got to have a heavenly mentality.